Newstalk's Executive Chair.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With Microsoft 365 from Vodafone, your business can bring the team together wherever they are. See vodafone.ie/business.
I'm delighted to welcome to the executive chair this week, Mary O'Dea. She's the chief executive at the IOB, that's the Institute of Banking. Mary, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks a million, Bobby. Great to be here.
Now, it all started in Ruhini with you. Your first job was in Best Menswear, where I think you worked with your dad, is that right?
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about your early days.
My dad kind of worked his way up from the bottom all the way to the top in Best Menswear, and I went in, started off going in there for summers. And of course, he made an absolute show of me. He would stand at the top of the stairs, pretend to be the customers, and in front of all of the other staff, I had to try out how I was going to approach a customer, when I would approach them, etc., etc. So I think my dad was kind of the epitome of customer service.
Great learnings. Now, you went on to study pure economics at UCD, masters in treasury and investment, another masters in executive coaching in Smurfit. So education was clearly right on your radar.
Yeah, education's always been a passion of mine. And I just find at different stages in your life, you're open to different types of learning. And the discipline of doing it, you know, in a structured way really helps me. So, and of course, you know, there's so many new and different things happening, new skills to assimilate, and which of course is why this job as CEO of Institute of Banking is so important to me.
Tell us about your first break was to get a job in the central bank. What did you go in there as?
I went in as an economist. Now, it was the 80s, Bobby.
Yeah, so there wasn't a lot of jobs around.
So I applied for everything under the sun. And most of my class actually emigrated to London. So I was absolutely delighted to get the job as economist in the central bank. I was actually only the second woman after Frances Ruan in there as an economist. But it was a brilliant learning ground. There was great people to actually teach me about economic forecasting and really how the real economy hangs together.
Tell us about your progression within the central bank. You started off as an economist. You were there a number of years, but you ended up carrying out quite a number of roles.
Yeah, because the central bank's role, of course, evolved over that time. And at one point, the economist really just stayed in the lane of forecasting. But once the Financial Services Centre was devised, and that was kind of coming in, being built in 1987-ish, a new area was set up to look at regulating investment services within that. And that was a very exciting time for me. So, for example, we had three futures exchanges setting up in Ireland. And I was given the task of saying, well, how do you regulate a futures exchange? What does that look like? Had to learn from London, had to learn from the US. So very exciting new project. And I think that kind of was, I like those kind of new projects where you can get stuck into them and make a difference. So I really enjoyed that. And then, of course, moved on to the consumer side, probably bringing it full circle back to my early days and Best, maybe the customer service side. But the consumer director role for me was a very important one, really setting out consumer protection rules, codes, being able to enforce those. And that still endures today. So that was one that I really enjoyed, that role.
Now, it probably wasn't all plain sailing at the central bank. 2009, you were acting chief executive for the financial regulator. They surely were dark days.
Very, very dark. They were dark days for the whole country, Bobby. They were very, very dark days. People were personally impacted and impacted in ways that they probably haven't come back from in many, many ways. I'm really conscious of that. But I think for anybody in and around financial service, especially, they were really dark days. That 2009 for me was 24/7, really working, looking at the financial system. How can we structure this? How can we save the financial system, really, and try to get the economy cranking back up again?
Was there immense pressure on you in that job?
Huge pressure. That was a very, very difficult year, I would say, challenging year. But of course, there's always the upside. And the upside for me there was the people. I worked with incredible people who, you know, despite the fact that it was, you know, awful times, they gave everything of themselves to try and turn it around and get it to a place where we can now see a different economy, albeit with all of the hang-ups that came and the hangovers that are still there from the crisis.
So you did 6 years in Washington, D.C. What stage was that at?
Yeah, so just after that, 2011, I moved over to D.C. initially for 3 years to serve on the board of the IMF as Ireland's representative there. And then I stayed on for a further 3 years on the as Ireland's representative on the board of the World Bank.
Tell us about that. That must have been a wonderful experience.
It was a fantastic experience. So in the IMF, because Ireland was in an IMF programme, of course, everybody wanted to see how Ireland was doing, etc. And a lot of that job was not so much the pure economics that it might have been at one time in that role. It was very much about relationships, relationship building, and really filling people in on how the Irish programme was going, so that when it came to the board to be voted through for the next tranche of lending to be set out, that directors would understand that Ireland was achieving its goals and be able to get the money.
How do you think history will view Ireland's, I suppose, time in the IMF?
Yeah,
when you look back on it now, like they went in, it was dark, they came out, but standing back from it all now, how did we get on?
I think the role of the IMF in the so-called Troika at the time was a crucial role, because the IMF understood better than others, I believe, how to get turn an economy around, and how, while horrible conditionality had to be put in at the time and things had to be done, but that would actually lead to light at the end of the tunnel. I think a number of reports, etc., has been written, and there's great learning from all of those about, for example, groupthink, about policy decisions along the way. I think it'll be another 50 or 60 years, because we still have, you know, as I said, we still have tales from it now. So I think it'll be a long time before we can really see that objectively.
Okay. Your role in the Institute of Banking then, maybe slightly different, but it brings you back to educating. Mm. Tell us about the Institute of Banking in terms of its relevance in the sector. Is it the place that basically provides accredited education for bankers and financial people, let's call them?
Got it in one, Bob. Right. So originally what it used to be was just for banking. So we're actually 127 years old, would you believe? And it was established originally for bankers. But now Ireland, of course, is a global financial services centre. And within that centre, we have international banking, we have funds industry. It's an enormous industry. And we've changed to reflect that. So we actually have rebranded as IOB. We have funds by IOB, international banking by IOB, investment, etc., etc. So we've a programme of 40 accredited programmes. The difference between us and other education bodies is all of our students, and we've about 7,000 a year who take accredited learning from us, they're all working. So they're all in financial services. They're all kind of mid-career financial services.
And how important is, you know, an accreditation with yourselves, if I'm a banker, in terms of my own career progression?
Well, I think there's two bits to that. So for some of it, you must have it. If you're a frontline in financial services, there's some mandatory training that the regulator requires. However, the big growth areas for us are the non-mandatory areas. We've 33,000 members. All of them take training with us, which is quite incredible when you think of it, every year. So, for example, last week we had our boot camps, as we call them, where we provide continuous professional development for all our members in a condensed way. And we had almost 14,000 people on those boot camps.
Wow, big numbers.
Huge numbers. So they're looking at things like the economic update. They might be doing a module on ethics, etc. And of course, new programs around AI, digital, sustainable finance. It's really important. Like, you can't sort of sit in financial services and say, OK, I did my perhaps basic accounting and credit and all. That still endures. But the new skills are massively important for you to continue to progress within the industry.
You mentioned AI there. It's obviously something that you're acutely focusing on. What do you think the implications for the sector will be, banking, as AI, you know, gains more momentum within it?
I think AI will massively change the sector, and not just the banking sector, the funds sector, for example. A lot of that processing, etc., will definitely have AI involved, and it already is. So it's not even something that's coming; it's already happening. But I actually think what it's going to do is change the jobs within the sector. So I wouldn't be concerned, for example, about a big shrinkage in jobs in the sector. If you look at recent reports, Expert Skills Group is reporting skills shortages, and up to 2027, we might need 4,000 to 6,000 more people across the global financial centres in Ireland. So I actually think that AI is something that is going to be an enabler. And we have five different AI programmes because, you know, it's the basic level. So there's the basic skills certificate all the way up to if you're in modelling, in data, in risk, you need something much more sophisticated on the AI side. So you pick which one is most suitable for you.
Are banks still very wary of cryptocurrencies?
Yeah, I think banks are wary in general of those kind of developments. So whether it's cryptocurrency or the latest scam, for example, I think banks are really working on these. We run awards every year called the Future Finance Awards. And I always love to see the entries where people are kind of, you know, really sort of using their brain power around how am I going to look at this and develop it better? And for example, one of our award winners this year was somebody who was looking at the data they have, working with the guards and being able to look at trends that would identify human trafficking and work with the guards on that. I mean, though, I think those kind of watch outs are great places that financial services are at the front line of.
A bit about downtime, Mary. It sounds like with the career that you've had that there hasn't been much time for things other than banking. But tell us about the camper van, a 20-year-old camper van that you've bought and you're loving the connection with nature. Did you do it up? Was it a DIY project?
Oh, God, no. I wouldn't be able to do it up at all. I have to make sure there's somebody on the end of the phone who can fix it if necessary. But myself and my husband, we love live music. We love, and the camper van's a great way of doing that. So we'll be going around to festivals. He'll have the guitar in the back. And, exactly. And it's just that kind of, you know, you connect to nature, everything stills, everything slows a little bit. So as long as it keeps going, Bobby, we'll be all right.
All right. Well, Mary O'Dea, Chief Executive of the IOB, that is the Institute of Banking. Thanks for joining us today. And good luck in your quest, both in the camper van and in the financial education. Thank you, Mary.
Bobby, great to be here. Thank you.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11. On News Talk.